physician. I did my medical training at the University of Maryland, residency in preventive medicine at Johns Hopkins, a fellowship in cancer prevention with a focus in cancer survivorship at the National Cancer Institute, then came back to the University of Maryland to lead a new program in cancer survivorship. I recently left the University of Maryland because of family obligations, but I'm really happy to be here with you today and would like to acknowledge that this is the work of my mentor, Dr. Claudia Baquet. So I thank Dr. Baquet for allowing me the opportunity to present her work here. As I talk about this model that Dr. Baquet and colleagues have developed, I'm going to go over some relevant definitions. I'm going to talk about some of the ways that she has effectively communicated health disparities research to stakeholders, including constituents and policymakers, and then talk about some of the outcomes associated with the application of this model in Maryland. Many, or if not all of us, are very familiar with the different definitions of health disparities, as well as, unfortunately, with the groups that are most likely to suffer with the undesirable outcomes. What I want to emphasize using this slide is, even though my focus today is going to be on health disparities research, many different types of research can be used to inform policy that can be used to affect outcomes and actually improve lives. So health disparities research can serve as a powerful tool for, first of all, documenting the existence and extent of health disparities, contributing to our understanding of the causes of health disparities, informing policymakers' agenda as well as legislation, mandates, and regulation, and helping foster sustainability of interventions that are actually shown to make a difference in eliminating or decreasing health disparities. So, just to go over a few brief definitions, policies are activities that are developed to achieve specific anticipated outcomes. And policy can be implemented through either legislation or regulation. Legislation are laws that are developed by elected officials. They usually result in statutory law. Another type of legislation is a mandate, which is a requirement by legislators that health insurers provide coverage or pay for specific services that they may not otherwise pay for because of cost-cutting initiatives. And a regulation is an authoritative rule usually developed by a federal body that is tasked with carrying out the legislation that was developed by lawmakers. There's been considerable success in Maryland in translating health disparities research results into policy, and this is a direct result of several things, including ongoing legislative technical assistance through testimony at hearings, committee briefings, both participating in and planning workshops for constituents or for people of the lay community, as well as for policymakers who, again, can be legislators or people at the federal level who carry out the laws, and just having a concerted effort to interact with all members of the different stakeholder communities. So, again, this is the model, and it just describes the process of taking research results, which, for instance, may document the fact that a disparity exists in mortality, taking that to policymakers, informing them of that, and helping them, or just providing them the information so that they can develop policy, which could either be legislation or regulation, that responds to that specific disparity. And the policy would usually come in the form of an intervention, whether that be money to perform a pilot study or a mandate to cover particular treatments that would ultimately affect outcomes. And then a final but essential part of that is evaluation. It's very important to always go back and make sure that the intervention actually accomplished or didn't accomplish the ends that it was designed to. because if not, then it may be necessary to go and develop a new intervention. But if it did, it would lead to expansion of that across larger groups of people. So, in summary, evidence-based policy comes about as a result of ongoing legislative technical assistance. And this not only comes from researchers, this should also come from members of the constituent community. So an important part of what you do as researchers should be to empower constituents by giving them the information so that they can go and speak on their own behalf to their legislators. So I'm going to talk about some things that have been done as a result of this model in Maryland, just to give you a brief overview. Maryland has 188 senators and delegates from 47 districts. The session meets for about 3 months out of the year, and the General Assembly has the ability to cut the state budget, and it is tasked with developing laws that affect the general welfare. The state has provided significant financial support for health disparities research, as well as for interventions to impact health disparities, both for the University of Maryland School of Medicine, as well as other institutions of higher learning in Maryland. Between 2000 and 2007, there were 20 substantial bills that would affect health disparities in the areas of cancer and cardiovascular disease, and I'm just going to review a few examples today. For one, Maryland, you all are, I'm sure, all very familiar with the tobacco settlement where 46 states sued tobacco manufacturers and received a very large settlement. Maryland was one of very few states that actually set aside a significant portion of that money so that it could be used to study tobacco-related diseases and to study health disparities related to these diseases. Related to hormone-related cancers, there have been two bills that were passed recently to fund pilot studies to address health disparities in prostate cancer and in breast cancer. The prostate cancer screening program set aside money to improve screening and, if necessary, treatment of prostate cancer in men from Charles County, Maryland, which is a rural county. Which has one of the highest prostate cancer incidence and mortality rates in the state. And the breast cancer appropriation was for women who are at high risk for breast cancer who fall outside of the normal screening guidelines, so those who are young but more likely to have aggressive disease and therefore die as a result of the disease. Other examples of legislation that would address health disparities in the area of cultural competence, so to improve the cultural competence of the physician and the overall healthcare workforce include, in 2003, there was a bill passed that required the State Department of Health and Mental Hygiene to develop a plan to address health disparities. The next year, it followed up with the establishment or funds to establish the Office of Minority Health and Health Disparities. And 2 years later, they followed up with the Racial Ethnic Variations Healthcare Disparities Policy Report Card, which would essentially require us to track health disparities, any changes that would occur as a result of interventions. There was also the Cultural Competency and Health Outcomes, which was another pilot program funded by the legislature that required the teaching hospitals to develop cultural competency programs to improve the competency of the physician workforce. And a oral health safety net program that basically expands the ability of the state system to provide oral health care to low-income and underserved disabled Marylanders. So we briefly talked about mandates before. Again, those are legislative requirements that insurance companies pay for things or provide coverage for certain procedures that they may not otherwise pay for because of cost cutting. Maryland has over 40 mandates, and although mandates do not apply to small group markets or Medicaid or self-insured, so companies that actually provide their own insurance and they don't subcontract to another group to provide their insurance, often these groups will follow and make regulatory changes to their policies. So they're still very important. And mandates cover a number of cancer related areas as well as other health related areas. So these are just examples of the cancer related mandates over the past 7 years. And they cover everything from coverage for off-label use of medications to clinical trials requiring that insurance covered companies pay the costs associated with some clinical trial participation to prostheses after mastectomy and wigs after chemotherapy, all of which have tremendous potential to impact quality of life for survivors. So overall, legislative policy has been tremendously influenced by technical support and informed constituents in the state of Maryland. And this has, in many cases, assured access to treatment and procedures that people may not have otherwise had access to. And the University of Maryland developed a grant application, I believe, with Bowie State University. The grant was provided by the National Center for Minority Health and Health Disparities. It was a P60 mechanism. And it was developed to explain mandated benefits to minority and medically underserved groups throughout the state of Maryland. So as a result of that and some of the work around that, we've learned a lot of things. First and foremost, that many people they're not aware of these mandates, and if they don't know about them, they can't take advantage of them. So the collective we need to do a much better job at promoting awareness that these mandates exist so that the people who they're targeting can take advantage of them. So in closing, the things that you can do as researchers to inform policy and really affect the change that most of us are trying to affect include empowering the community to advocate on their behalf, arming them with the information that you're learning through your research, also providing technical assistance, providing the information that the legislators need so that they can make informed policy, science-guided policy. There are other groups that are providing them information, some of which is slanted, some of which may not be reflective of facts. And whenever possible, expanding your efforts beyond your local policymakers. I know that Dr. Paquet has been very active at the national level in providing technical assistance about the needs of underserved, the needs and disparities between underserved Marylanders and underserved constituents, period. And these are just some places that she's provided that support. These are four funding mechanisms that she has funded that allow her to do much of this work. And I just want to end with a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., noted civil rights activist and scholar, who said, "Of all the forms of inequality, injustice, and healthcare is the most shocking and inhumane. I challenge you all to do what you can to empower the constituents of your state and inform the legislators about your research so that they can make informed, science-guided policy." Thank you. Again, I'd like to just thank Dr. Paquet for her mentorship, as well as for allowing me to give this talk, Dr. Laquandra Nesbitt and Ms. Meseret Bazuna for their technical assistance in helping me prepare this talk, as well as all the staff, including and especially Ms. Erica Turrell, for their support throughout the past year. Thank you.
Thank you very much to all our presenters. I believe since we only have three of the four presenters today, we do have extra time for questions. So I'd like to open it up to the audience for any questions. Yes, in the back.
Again, I'm presenting Dr. Claudia Baquet's work, so this is not actually my success, but I believe that an important part of being successful has been to develop relationships, to not just go and try and talk with the legislators when you need something. This ongoing technical assistance happens throughout the year, not just during the legislative season. So I think that part of forming relationships, I think that can be very helpful, and not just necessarily giving information when they need information about cancer, that's fine, but if they also need assistance with cardiovascular disease or other areas of health, I think that it's just about developing relationships and then nurturing those over time. Going to call Ms. Meseret Bazuna, who's been very involved in all aspects of everything that I've talked about, and turn the floor over to her because, again, I'm presenting Baquet's work. I don't think it's just working with legislators. I think it's working with legislators and working with constituents, because legislators want to know what their constituents feel. They want to be where their constituents are. So if you have activities that incorporate or that are appealing to both legislators as well as the people who vote for them, you're going to get everyone's attention, and you'll get the different sides talking with each other.
Thank you. Arkansas approach to that. The community linkage, that's part of a larger and I think a very fundamental component of our larger Arkansas Community Networks project is in building these relationships with, in our case, community-level cancer councils around the state, not just for policy development work, but for intervention design and planning and prioritizing issues. One of the strategies that we focused on in Arkansas is not just having the university be the stimulus for reaching out in the community and helping those community organizations engage in the policy level, but we're also really striving to build capacity within the community, within those community organizations, to directly engage in policy development activities. So we've spent a lot of time working with our community cancer councils, educating them about the various policy levers that might be used to address cancer issues, educating them, getting them plugged into their local and state elected officials, helping them understand the policy development process, helping them understand some advocacy and coalition building and planning skills, so that those community organizations themselves have the capacity to go in and directly engage with policy stakeholders, so that they're not dependent on the university to do that. And in fact, what we found is that in a lot of cases, our community organizations are a lot more effective in getting policymakers to the table and getting them to pay attention to these issues than the university is. In our case, we're a medical university, so we also, in some sense, we're another stakeholder in the healthcare debate. We've got our own fish to fry in the policy environment. We're trying to get our cancer center funded, and so. In some cases, legislators kind of view our university a little bit askance because we do have a vested interest in some policy issues. And in those situations, the community can be even more credible than the university in some cases in policy issues. So.
In Detroit, we tend to have a unique relationship with our university. Wayne State University is unique in itself in that it is in an urban setting. It has an urban mission. And a lot of the organizations that support the community have kind of sprung out of, the mission that's developed as, around the university as well as the School of Medicine at the university. And we tend to attract a different type of individual, different types of organizations. So we're in a unique kind of position to really influence the individuals that are at the table. And then in addition to that, because our state is in a little bit of a turmoil right now, I don't know if however many of you know about Michigan and its economy at the moment, but we are very reliant on manufacturing and the big three and their shift in moving away from health care support has caused us to have a number of other conversations. So our CMP in being new, we are aware of the fact that universities tend to take the research, do the research on the community, and then kind of, hit the road. Because of the urban mission that Wayne State represents, that tends not to be the case so much, but when researchers up and leave and go to another academic institution, sometimes they carry that knowledge with them. What we're trying to do is really foster the relationship in developing those researchers from the community that are living in the community, that are going to stay in the community, so that we will have that sustained support over time.